Hello, everyone. This is Luke John Louis, the host of the Deep Voice Man Show. Thanks for joining us today. We have a treat in store for you guys. A great treat. Our guest is Dale K. Matthew, a financial advisor. Now, he graduated from Pace University, Lubin School of Business, with a bachelor's in accounting and finance. All right. He has worked for firms like New York Life and Northwestern Mutual, and he's someone who specializes in wealth accumulation and retirement strategies, particularly with the LGBTQ community. And so we're very lucky to have him here. He's also someone who enjoys long-distance running. He's done at least about 7 marathons in San Francisco, New York, and L.A., and we'd love for him to talk about that. And so, again, I met Dale through networking, and we just hit it off. We stayed in touch for close to a year. And so we're very lucky to have him here, very blessed. And he's a very busy man, so we're so happy that he carved out some time in his packed schedule to sit down and have a chat with us. So thank you so much for that, Dale. All right. So, I mean, first, can you tell us about, you know, yourself, your background, and how you first gravitated towards what you do today?
So, Luke, first, you know, I want to say thank you for allowing me to be a part of this podcast. Like you mentioned, you know, we did meet through networking, and mm-hmm. actually quite a unique circumstances, right? You know, I mm-hmm. would say that COVID sort of brought us together. You know,
right.
For me, it was me getting busy to build my social media platform and network in a different genre, I guess, you know, before COVID, you know, I was meeting people in person, and I had to make that swift changed into virtual networking. So again, thanks.
You got it. Thank you so much for coming on.
Great. So how did I guess gravitate towards financial sales? As you mentioned, I do have a finance degree. I've always worked in accounting, finance, specializing in sales and use tax, property tax. I did that for about 12 years. And, you know, I found it rewarding, but you get to a point, I got to a point in my life where, you know, every other day it seemed like month end, you know, I was doing a month end close, having tax returns, and I was looking for something more creative, something that would, you know, give me more flexibility with my time and income. And like I said, I have the finance background. I've always sort of dabbled in my own finances. But, you know, I had that need to work with other people. You know, I communicated well, you know.
Wow.
And there's a need out there for financial education.
Yeah.
So, again, my situation wasn't unique. I just got laid off from my current position. I was out in San Francisco. And I'm like, well, you know, this is probably that epiphany that I needed, you know, to just make that leap.
Yeah.
You know, I always felt I had this disease called the 15th and the 30th, meaning, you know, I've always worked for someone, and I knew the first step would put me in a position where, you know, I'll be working at 100% commission.
Right.
And, you know, how am I going to make a living? So I just said, you know, this is the time. And I did. I got picked up by New York Life. And
wow.
Great company. The sales training was phenomenal
because
I didn't have the sales background. So at that point, I just really wanted the education, you know, sort of how do I communicate financial sales to customers. And so again, great company, great sales background, and I took it from there. I was in San Francisco for 12 years. I was with New York Life for 3 of those years, and came back to New York, did a small, you know, stint with Northwestern Mutual, but again, just trying to find my way through the financial world, or financial sales world. Ended up working currently with Empire Wealth Strategies. And
wow.
What that opened the door to being more creative with financial sales, because all the companies I've worked with have always been companies that sold products, meaning, you know, the New York Life products or the Northwestern Mutual products. Empire Wealth is more of a open architecture, meaning that there's no Empire Wealth product. So we broker out the best product to suit the client's needs. So I really like that format, and it makes me a bit more creative and a bit and very much efficient when dealing with our clients.
Wow. Well, that's incredible. I think I would think every and any financial advisor would want to work with a firm like Empire Wealth, so they're not locked into that company. You know, it would make
sense. And it's great for the advisors as well, I think.
Definitely. So, you know, you have an incredible story here. It's interesting how you worked for someone else in accounting and whatnot, and you were busy during the tax season, and you wanted more out of life. You said you wanted, you know, flexibility, you wanted to be more creative, you wanted, you know, more freedom with your time and perhaps to make, you know, even higher income, you know. And and it's interesting how so many people may be stuck at these jobs that they may not like, particularly with being an accountant. You know, there are a lot of miserable accountants out there, I think. But they're scared to make that leap. And you had the courage to sort of make that leap, as you said. And you took advantage of it. You had an opportunity. You were laid off. And you said to yourself, well, you know, when life gives you a lemon, you make lemonade. You figured this might be a sign. This might be a blessing in disguise.
I felt it was the right time, yes.
Right. Well, that's amazing. That's an incredible story. And I think you're better for it. I think the people that you serve are better for it, that you made that decision. But it's interesting that you're always into numbers, but you have to make the transition to go into sales, and you have to learn sales and combine it with your knowledge of numbers and whatnot. And I'm sure obviously you've had success with that, and now sales kind of scares people, particularly commissions. Yeah, you know, but you went out and you jumped and you leaped for it. I think that's incredible, and more people have to do what you did. And I'm hoping a lot of people are inspired by your story and your bravery and your decision. So I'm curious, you mentioned this already with COVID. I'm curious what is the current state of, you know, financial advising in the industry and people's finances as a whole, and what other challenges has the pandemic essentially posed? You mentioned a few already, but do you want to clarify even if there's been more?
Well, you know, people are nervous, right? But let's face it, life goes on, right? There's a pandemic, and people are concerned, firstly, about the market, you know, how well they're doing, you know, should I be in the market? And I say yes. But they're nervous, like everything else. And, you know, I don't really blame them. But, you know, even though this period may be extraordinary, you know, we haven't experienced this in our lifetimes, but, you know, we've had levels of financial instability, and I'm confident that the economy is going to come back. It's going to take time. And, you know, when we talk to clients, when I talk to my clients, you know, you just have to ride this out. I think, you know, we should continue investing, continue planning for the future, because life goes on.
Right. Okay. Totally understand. And obviously you said before that you preferred in-person networking and meetings, but obviously you had to transition to virtual. And so obviously, you know, you just adapt, so to speak. It's interesting because I've spoken to quite a few other people who said that because of this, they've been able to expand their business, because now, since everything is sort of virtual, they're able to talk to people outside of their city, you know, maybe across the country, several states away. So I guess it's interesting how with crisis can sort of come opportunity, so to speak. and which I think is amazing. Obviously, in person is much more preferable to virtual, and hopefully we get to in person soon, sooner rather than later. I'm curious. You've dealt with the issues of the pandemic, and you've had to adapt. But obviously, there'll be a world when there's no pandemic. There'll be, you know, post-pandemic. Hopefully, it comes sooner rather than later with the vaccine and whatnot. Where do you see the industry going in the future, and where do you see yourself in that future?
Where do I see the industry going? I think, you know, as long as, you know, we have financial needs, you know, I'll be in a job, you know, retirement
sure.
plan, protection mm-hmm. planning. Where do I see it going? You know, I am curious. I've been following the market in terms of digital currency,
mm-hmm.
which
mm.
I am not necessarily, my industry really does not yet recognize it. And, you know, I wouldn't dabble too much in talking about it, but
right.
I think the future. You know, I am looking at Bitcoin, Forex, and I think that's the future. I think we're going to, I mean, planning will remain the same, but I think we have new tools at our disposal, and I am fascinated by that.
Wow. Yeah, I've heard a lot about Bitcoin. I had one friend tell me that he was able to make a lot of money trading with Bitcoin, but you have to know when to get in, get out, so to speak. And Bitcoin's not necessarily my thing personally, but I see there's probably a future for cryptocurrencies and whatnot. I think it probably will expand and whatnot. I think there's a need for people to want to use the currency that's not backed by a government, so to speak, and sort of independent. So, all right. And
let me stress, because I'm not, I hope, you know, it doesn't come across
sure.
like I'm endorsing anything here, because I'm
sure.
really not allowed to endorse. But I would say,
yeah.
you know, when I'm talking to millennials, I mean, this is what
yeah.
they're talking about. You know,
right.
and this is their reality. And I think, you know, we need to not take, it's not a second look at this point. It's here. So it
right,
definitely
yeah.
should be a part of the toolkit.
Right. Yeah, definitely. It definitely is growing in popularity, because whenever I network, I meet with a lot of people who are traders, and they want me to, you know, give them some money so they can invest it for me and whatnot. So it's definitely very big right now. It's probably,
right.
I do think it's going to get bigger in the future. And so, you know, I'm curious now, when it comes to financial advising, a lot of people may see it as sort of unnecessary. You know, they may view it as like, you know, why do I have to pay money or fees to a middle person? And why can't I just manage my own wealth or assets? And what would you say to a person who may have that attitude, that who views the job as maybe not being necessary?
Well, you know, I like the term when you said middle person, and
right.
I consider myself to be that middle person. But we play well with others, you know.
Right.
As you go through life, you know, you have your CPA, your attorney,
yeah.
even your medical professional. And we work with all of these professionals. You know, we play well with each other. And, you know, we offer what I like to call a cradle-to-grave, you know, financial service, you know. So, again, you position these people in your life. And, yes, you may be able to do some of it, but I have access to all of it. And,
right.
you know, I'm not sitting here claiming that I know everything, but, you know, my office, you know, there are other professionals that I can go to for advice, or it's just one-stop shopping. So, yes, I'm the middleman, but I think it's a necessary middle, if you want to put it that
No problem. No, I totally agree. Obviously, this is something that you've studied. You've studied finance. You've studied accounting. You've taken lots of tests. And, you know, to get this role, it's regulated. You have to get a license and whatnot. And
right.
and so it's, I do think it's definitely important. You know, people go to a nutritionist, a personal trainer, a doctor, you know, an accountant, they go to a lot of different people for advice. Even the richest people use financial advisors, I imagine, and corporations. So, you know, it's good to go to someone who has studied this for a living, who lives and breathes this stuff, so to speak. And there's definitely a huge need. And I think people like yourself and others tend to hold people accountable, tend to, you know, you'll guide people and coach people the way they need to be guided and coached, because reading a book sometimes doesn't really cut it, you know, so to speak. You know,
right.
The book's not going to make you do it, you know, or give you that personalized, customized, tailored service specific to you and your needs, you know. So I'm curious now, there are a lot of people, you said there's a huge need for this and there'll always be, and I agree with you, that neglect things like insurance or getting life insurance, health insurance, things like, you know, retirement or saving for college, saving for the kids' college or whatnot, or doing a will for when they die. You know, we hear about celebrities like Prince and Aretha Franklin. They had all this money and they died and no will. Like, what's going on? Why do you think people neglect these types of services to go out and do this for themselves or to get someone to help them do it for them?
So, I mean, over the years, I've heard so many different reasons, and I don't think there's one particular reason. But, you know, when you look at life insurance, I think, first off, you know, we, even me, before I even got into the industry, you know, you think you're in defense. You just think that, hey, this is not going to happen to you. You're invincible.
Right.
You're not going to die anytime soon. You know, I'm young, I'm healthy. Or then there are other people who just see it as a bill, you know, just see it as that line item. You know, it's about, why am I paying for this? And it goes back to the same thing. You know, I don't need this. Why am I paying for it? So it becomes a bill. And it's just basically neglect and not sitting and having that conversation. And, you know, when I talk to a client, it's just what we call a discovery meeting. And, you know, I know your goals for the next 5 years, 10 years, or whatever we're planning for. So it's having that discussion, and I give my recommendations. What you do with the recommendation is up to you, right? But you need to at least have the conversation or have the knowledge that this is what's available to me. And if you don't take advantage of it, you know, like you mentioned Aretha Franklin, I'm sure someone spoke to her, you know, somewhere down the line, and she just decided not to move forward.
Yeah.
And
it's weird.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm curious now, obviously insurance is so important and it's great that you do those discovery calls. So people can just know a little bit more about their options. And it's interesting how you said you play well with others, because you have to sort of, you know, communicate, and you know how to communicate in the same language as an accountant or a CPA.
Right.
And these other folks that a person may hire and deal with.
Well, when I said that, it's not. So, you know, you go to your accountant, you're doing your taxes. It's like, Luke, you have an extra $20,000. What do you plan to do with it?
Right.
You know, I work with your CPA. You know, your CPA is giving me information. You know, we're working together. Disability situation, you know, we're communicating with your doctors. So that's what I was trying to get. We all are, you know, intertwined with each other and work.
Right. Now, I totally understand. So I'm curious. Obviously, there are so many financial advisors out there. And how do you stand out? Like, obviously, a lot of you guys are selling the same kind of product or similar product. Like, how do you have to have a niche, or – like, how do you kind of differentiate yourself?
So you do have to have a niche. And, you know, this goes back to the beginning, how you start in the business. But from my standpoint, I think it's all about relationship building. And, you know, it's how you feel. You walk in, you have that first meeting, and how comfortable do you feel with that person? So I think it's developing that relationship. There are a lot of us out there, but who do you think you have a relationship, or who would you want to work with? And I think it starts there, just growing that relationship. You want to sit in front of someone that you feel comfortable with, that is going to have your best interest at heart. So it's basic relationship building.
Okay, definitely. I hear a lot of times it's about the personality of the individual. And that's amazing. And I'm sure you're someone that when people meet you, they have a sense of trust, I feel that from you, you know, speaking with you, knowing you for all the time I've known you. And and if you're able to communicate that non-verbally and people get that vibe from you. And you said niche before. Now, how does one decide what their niche should be, or is it what the niche they themselves belong in, or?
So sometimes you sit down and you decide on a niche, and sometimes niche markets are sort of decided for you. Your first may be a doctor, and before you know it, you're referred to 12 doctors, and that ends up becoming your niche market. So it takes different forms. You know, you can do target marketing, and I only want to work with young professionals. I only want to work with people in tech, or you just fall into a niche market.
Wow. It's interesting how sometimes it could choose you and not the other way around.
Exactly.
All right. Well, can you tell us moving or entertaining stories from your career, how you may have helped someone solve an issue or solve the problem or crisis or anything?
Well, amusing, and it may not be amusing. I think just last week I was sitting in front of a couple, and we were doing the insurance planning portion. And, having a conversation, husband and wife are sitting there, and I'm directing the question to the husband, talking about how much coverage, he thinks they should have should he pass away, and how long would he like to, keep his wife maintaining the lifestyle, he currently has. And he looked at me and looked at her, and his answer was, I expect that you'll get married after, He basically was not thinking of providing for her because, she's going to get married. So the meeting ended abruptly because she was not having it. She didn't like the response and ended the meeting. And I mean, it was sad, but to me, it was like the funniest response because I wasn't expecting that. I wasn't expecting her to say that. So that was a little amusing, but hopefully they'll work it out and we'll be back at the table soon.
Oh my! Oh wow! That's an incredible story, actually. That I'd be upset too if my spouse had that kind of answer or response. Right. I'm curious now. You mentioned this before about relationship building. Financial advisors fascinate me because you guys are some of the best networkers I know. And I know that networking is so vital to what you guys do. And you want, obviously, the goal is to get to a point where you rely on referrals for the most part. Instead of chasing new clients, you want to get to the point where you rely mostly or solely on referrals. What advice would you give to people when it comes to networking and getting referrals and whatnot?
So my experience is networking and referrals, it's a process. Because now you've gotten the client to get comfortable with you and to work with you. But then there's that extra layer. Are they comfortable with you enough that they can refer you to someone else?
Right.
And even though they may appreciate your work, at some point they don't trust you enough that you would go to a friend or maybe a coworker and not discuss their finances. And that's what I realized in the conversation. There's so many different layers. But, as time goes on and, you build that relationship and you build your book of business, I know a lot of advisors that are strictly on a referral basis. But that just doesn't happen overnight. You got to be on the grind. You're out there hustling before you even get to that level.
Right. Yeah. Wow. You know, that's what also fascinates and impresses me about you guys is that in the beginning you do have to grind, and not a lot of people make it. Obviously, there's, I'm guessing, turnover, attrition, you know, maybe a lot of advisors drop out and quit and realize this may not be the career for them. And you have to power through that grind until you get to the point where you're relying on referrals. So in the beginning, I'm guessing it's probably really tough. But did you have to go to a lot of networking events or cold calling? How did it work for you? Did you just speak to as many people as possible?
Everything is on the table. I think cold calling is sort of becoming obsolete for different reasons. Caller ID, everything is playing against that.
Yeah.
But definitely networking events, seminars, any method I can use to get in front of a group of people, because, I mean, that's how I generate income for myself, right? I'm in sales. I need to get in front of as many people as I can. And you and I talked about this, you know, pre-COVID, I was going to meet up, networking events, and meeting people, as we like to say, belly to belly. After that, COVID's cut that, to a halt. I sort of gravitated towards meeting people virtually. You and I met on Shaper, like we mentioned, and so different social media platforms. And maybe that's the new cold calling. I didn't think of it that way, but that's probably the new cold calling.
Wow. Wow. Well, social media, obviously, it's people using it and whatnot. It's growing by leaps and bounds. And do you think, obviously, I spoke to a lot of people about this, and they always say that even though people may network virtually, digitally, and online, they'll never be a replacement for in-person, networking. Do you believe that to be true, that there's just nothing like in-person networking, and hopefully it'll come back one day and it'll never really be replaced, so to speak?
So, part of 2020, I was like, it's going to come back, but I think it's gone. I think people are getting comfortable with it, and I don't think we're going backwards. I don't think we're getting used to it. And realistically, if you look at it, I think we, COVID is going to be, we're going to be on some sort of lockdown for probably the rest of 2021. I'm hoping not, but, I'm just trying to be realistic. So I think we did that audition already. And, there were a few hiccups, but we're here. I think this is it.
Wow. Yeah. Wow, that's I'm hoping in person does come back, but you very well might be right, because we always hear about these office buildings that are vacant, and so many people like to work from home, and getting people to come back would be difficult. Several people have moved out of cities and bought houses elsewhere. So it's tough to kind of, the horses have kind of left the barn, and it's tough to go backwards, as you said. So I'm curious. Now, obviously, you are African American, right? And I'm also Black American, and you're a member of a minority group. And I'm curious, have you ever faced any racism or discrimination on your journey or whatnot?
In terms of being a financial advisor, or are you talking life in general,
I guess both, I suppose.
I think racism exists, and I think I've probably received passive racism, or what I perceive to be passive racism. I know as an advisor, is it racism? Maybe. People like to work in their own community, I guess. I find it difficult to break into, other ethnic communities. And so, yes, I believe I have.
Okay, passive racism. Now, I know you said before that you've worked a lot with the LGBTQ community. Is it because they just trust you, or just did it just choose you, so to speak, or how did that happen?
Well, it didn't choose me. So it was a market that I was always interested in working with. Marriage equality changed everything for me because I see LGBTQ people planning differently now. They're legally getting married, you know.
Wow.
And you see it every day, adopting kids. The family dynamic is different than before. I guess because of marriage. I shouldn't say it's different. I just think they're planning differently.
Wonderful.
They're planning differently financially. You know, they're commingling finances. And as a gay person, you want to feel comfortable sitting across from another gay person who understands the dynamics of planning for a gay family.
Wow, that's incredible. So it's interesting how it's sort of like for a long time was an untapped market due to homophobia, and because of marriage equality, that untapped market is starting to get tapped, so to speak.
I don't think it was untapped. I just think the planning has sort of shifted. Since the beginning of time, I guess there've been couples or whatever, gay couples. I totally see a different a change in the way, especially the commingling of the finances, the planning, the kids, planning for college now. The family, the gay family has sort of shifted.
Okay. And then I'm guessing, and obviously, they may feel more comfortable with you and whatnot, and that's amazing. I'm all up for equality. We need more equality, not less of it. And so it's amazing. And I'm so happy that they're getting, you know, advice from folks like yourself who are very intelligent and who know finance inside and out. I'm curious, when it comes to financial advisors, obviously there's a bit of a negative perception some have. When it comes to people who work in the financial services industry, we've all seen the movies Boiler Room, Wolf of Wall Street. We always hear these stories about Bernie Madoff and whatnot. And I'm curious, what should the industry do to regulate and fix this issue? And how have you been able to thrive while staying above board and ethical?
So, you know, the industry has safeguards, right? And we are as fiduciaries, we all, you know, have our guidelines and what we should be doing. But as you just mentioned, fraud does happen. And I think the customer should probably do a bit more investigating. We have all those tools available now that we probably didn't have, like, I don't know, a generation ago. You want to deal with companies where you can, you know, AAA back-end, financial back-end. Hold on, I need to redo that.
No worries.
Okay. So, there are safeguards in place, but we just have to do our due diligence. As a consumer, you want to do your due diligence. You want to do a background check on any company that you're working with. When I talk to clients, and sometimes I'm just surprised, you know, we're buying a house, we're buying a pair of shoes. You know, we want the best. But sometimes I notice when it comes to finance, you know, people are looking for a deal. You know, they're probably not go with the bigger companies, whatever reason. But I think it takes the same planning. You know, you want to be with a reputable company. You want to be with a name that is recognizable, that has the financial backing. And again, you have the tools to do that type of research, to know the type of company you're working with.
Okay. They can go on websites like the Security and Exchange Commission, SEC.org, I believe.
Yeah.
Got it. And it's also, you mentioned some great advice, you know, in terms of you get what you pay for. You know, you don't want to go the cheap route. Sometimes the cheap comes expensive, as they say, so to speak.
Exactly.
You know, so I'm curious, you know, what advice would you give to someone who wants to go into this industry of being a financial advisor, particularly someone who may be a member of a minority group, like someone who may be African-American, or someone who may be a member of the LGBTQ community? You know, what would you tell them if they want to get started?
So, you know, that's a tricky question for me, because, you know, in my experience, so, you know, there is no silver bullet, you know. I've seen people with that you never – okay, let me start that over again.
No worries.
So
take your time.
There's no silver bullet. First off, you want to be a person that wants to help, you know, really interested in someone's finances or planning for the future. I would start there, but when I say there's no silver bullet, when I look at my peers, they come from different walks of life, and some, you never know who's going to make it. You know, sometimes, you know, it's like, oh, he doesn't have this personality or that personality, but, you need drive. And as long as you have the drive and the people to be in front of, the people to help and build relationships, as I mentioned before, because you definitely need to be a relationship builder and take it one step at a time. But you got to have the drive, and that's what keeps you in business, because, you know, most of the times you're working at 100% commission, and that in itself is a deal breaker, because, you know, when you're not making it and you don't have that paycheck to take home weekly, monthly, whatever it is, it can definitely, you know, drive you out of the business or away from the business.
Wow. That's interesting. So it's curious how you mentioned drive, and it doesn't matter what your ethnicity is or what your background is or what your gender or sexual orientation is. Drive is the key ingredient. And there are people who may have, you know, belonged to a group that's more, you know, with the majority, so to speak, and they may not have made it because they didn't have the drive. And that's incredible. And it's, so perseverance is a key attribute that a lot of successful people have, particularly entrepreneurs, because obviously in the beginning it's rough, it's commission, it's a grind. And so I guess perseverance and drive is a silver bullet, so to speak, right? Maybe you could call it, you know, reframe it that way. And it's interesting how you have to have drive and you have to have the right people around you, so to speak, because it's hard when you're not bringing home a paycheck in the beginning and you may have to pay bills. You know, so, yeah, I think that's a key lesson for people out there, that drive is so, so important. And so, I'm curious, you talked about this before. I just want to mention one more thing. You never want to judge a book by its cover, because you said before, you don't know who makes it, and you never can tell who's going to make it and who's not. And I think that's so important. No one should be underestimated, and people who are overestimated, they should be, you know, careful about doing that as well.
Sure.
So I'm curious, what you mentioned before, how it's important that a person like you or your personality or your vibe, when they meet with you as a financial advisor, so maybe they'll choose you over someone else that they may have not have liked personally as much. I'm curious, what advice would you give someone also, in addition to that, when it comes to looking for a financial advisor?
What advice would I give looking for?
If they're looking for one, yeah. Should they look for certain credentials? Now, I know before you said that they should perhaps not go the cheap route as well. And obviously, if they want quality, they sort of have to pay for it. But is there any other advice you would give someone, or should they just stick to that, just pay for quality and someone they like?
So, pay for quality to me is, probably the easiest route. But you can also discuss it with your friends. You mentioned earlier about referrals, and conversations with your friends. Basically, are you currently working with an advisor? Can you recommend an advisor? And so when you're walking in the door, you already have a personal reference, of the experience your friend, your family member had with that advisor. And again, when your first meeting with an advisor doesn't mean you become a client right away. And you may sit with two or three advisors before you choose one. And again, it's the one you feel most comfortable with. Sometimes I sit in meetings and I get the impression that, the client thinks they walk in the door and I'm trying to, get them to sign on the dotted line the first meeting. And I would like them to be a client. But again, there are steps to it. And it's just knowing, just being confident of walking in there and you're auditioning your next financial advisor. Can I work with him? Does he seem trustworthy? Am I comfortable with him? How much do I know about him?
Wow. And it's so important, referrals too, because if someone you trust says, "This guy, I've worked with this guy, he's great," that gives you, they're lending a bit of their reputation, out to you, which is great. And it's so important how you talked about an audition, how people have to audition for someone who's a financial advisor. It's like you have to, that old phrase, you have to shop around, so to speak, until you find what you like. And it's so important for people to shop around, and it's interesting. You don't pressure people. You don't try to get them to sign on the dotted line right away. And I think people actually appreciate that. That actually probably helps you to get more clients, and then if you were to do it the other way, obviously people don't respond well to pressure tactics. And that's something that, people perceive people who sell financial services to do, to be, boiler room tactics. And obviously, that kind of stuff is horrible. I believe it's probably illegal. And you said before cold calling is obsolete soon, or if not already. And I think a lot of people don't like the idea of people who sell financial services to them through a cold call over the phone, because we hear stories of guys who rip people off, who call people over the phone, these boiler room folks. And I think when you meet a person face to face or virtually through a referral, it helps a person to trust you more.
Okay.
So
So
I'm
let me
sure,
clarify
go ahead.
something on cold calling and how
Yeah.
I go about cold calling. So it's not necessarily selling on the phone. Again,
Right.
it's so cold calling is definitely to have that first meeting,
Right.
and get that person into the office to have that meeting. So I don't want to give us advisors a bad
Oh,
reputation.
sorry.
We're just
Sorry.
calling, and trying to sell you on the phone. I mean, it does happen.
Right.
It does happen, but.
Right. No problem. And I apologize for that. And I'm glad you made that clarification. Obviously, cold calling is not everyone who does it is bad. And obviously, people use cold calling to sell the appointment rather, or to get people to come in. I'm glad you made that clear. Thank you for that. So I'm curious, you mentioned folks who succeed have drive, and I'm curious, and you also have the courage to leap into a field that's 100% commission, as opposed to the security of the job that you had, but you may not have liked so much because due to the lack of creativity and freedom. I'm curious, what important life lessons do you have for people that you learned yourself, or you've learned from others, that you'd like to share with the audience? Obviously you mentioned drive and whatnot.
So I think everything to me sort of revolves around drive, and it has to do firstly with accountability, and just being present and in the moment. And when I look at the business, because there's a running joke in the business is that every day we wake up unemployed. So you need that drive and accountability to first get yourself motivated, and be accountable for your time, the type of work you're putting out there, or mm-hmm. the results you're getting from clients. You want to build really strong relationships, and that's one of my takeaways is you're not your client's best friend, but you want to be someone approachable and someone relatable, and that's what I've learned because besides working on their financial portfolio, you end up having conversations about their lives and how their kids are doing in school and and their divorces and their you get really personable with someone when you're dealing with their finances. So it's also dealing with that from a personal level. You share, they share, and it's a relationship.
Wow. That's amazing. So it's interesting how in many ways it's important to be likable and be a people person and be approachable. Obviously it's a people business and people have to like you, and that's so important, but it's interesting in many ways, you're almost like a therapist, for a client almost. And
I like to say confident, more like a confidant.
Oh, a confidant. Right.
Yeah.
That might be even better. I spoke with someone else, who shares the same role as you, and he said that in many ways you're almost like a life coach as well.
Yeah, I could see that, yeah. A financial coach, right?
Wow, and you spoke about accountability. Now, when I think about accountability, I usually think that you guys are holding the clients accountable, but I think you also mentioned the sense of accountability for yourself, like self-discipline in terms of you don't have anyone looking over your shoulder to make sure you do what you do. You have to, you're working completely for yourself almost, like it's 100% commission. There's no boss. Right. And that's amazing. And I think a lot of people, they may lack that self-discipline and drive to, because you have to be organized. You have to be your own boss. And you have to go to sleep on time, make sure you wake up at a certain time, do what you got to do. And I just find you people incredible. Very few people have the right set of traits and attributes to succeed at what you do. So you folks really impress me and are almost close to like superheroes to me,
Thank you.
So you got it. And I'm curious, what are there any books you would recommend to people, like any books that you've read that that have helped you out, any personal development books or any whatnot?
So what I would say is that I have, I was new to sales and I started reading so many books. And honestly, I found them so tedious, and I wasn't getting it until I came across, it's a little book, it's like about 96 pages, and it's by Spencer Johnson, it's called Who Moved My Cheese?
Oh my God.
To me, I connected with it. And it was the first motivational type book that sort of, just laid it out to me in the most basic sense I could think of. And I always refer back to it. Like I said, it's a short read. It's 96 pages. And that's the only book I would ever recommend.
Wow, that's the only book you'd ever recommend? Wow.
Well,
so do you
in
think this...
terms of motivational type.
As far as personal development. Oh, I see.
Exactly.
So that's incredible. I've heard so many good things about this book, that so many people have read it and said it's changed their lives or whatnot. And so I got to read this. I've heard of it before, but I definitely have to read it now. It's multiple people have recommended Who Wooed My Cheese. Wow. So I'm curious, are you ever going to write a book yourself about your life?
I don't believe so. You know, I've never been asked that question, and it's never crossed my mind. So as of now, no.
Well, you could write a book about, like, what it takes to succeed. Maybe not about your life, but what it takes to succeed as a financial advisor or sales or.
And again, what you just mentioned is I'm very curious, but my fear is, like I just mentioned, I find these books so tedious. You know, and everyone's experience is so unique to them. I'm not sure what anyone would get out of my experience, and I might be wrong. Like I said, I dove into it like head first with these books, and I was just left disappointed. I found it really tedious, but as of now, no, but who knows?
All right, no problem. Well, I think, you know, your story is very motivating and inspiring. And, you know, I do think you have a great story to share and great lessons to teach people. I totally get that. You find books tedious or whatnot. A lot of people agree with that kind of sentiment. And, you know, some people learn not by reading, but like by listening or by doing, you know, or, you know, by observing and whatnot. So reading, you know, some people are just not big on that. And a lot of books are tedious and very long, and there's a lot of fluff. So I hear you on that.
It's the motivational book. You know, I find motivational books. Sometimes I find, you know, they give you everything, maybe in the first chapter, and then you're reading at the end of the end of the book, and it's like, wait a minute, did I miss something here? And so I find it tedious. You know, I really find it tedious, but
no problem.
You should try Who Moves My Cheese. Like I said, it's an easy read.
I'm definitely going to read that. And, you know, it's interesting. You mentioned tedious, and time is time is our most valuable asset, our most valuable commodity. So,
exactly.
You know, you have to always make very good use of your time. So you don't want to spend it reading something that's tedious or repetitive or whatnot. So
sure.
I definitely hear you on that. I'm curious, can you go ahead and just describe all the ways that people can get in touch with you and have someone like you in their network? And whatnot, or perhaps if they want to reach out to you to utilize your services, or if they know someone who wants to utilize your services.
Okay, so I got a question to ask. Am I giving phone numbers? What am I?
Oh, sure. Just what are the best ways that people can reach out to you? Like the best contact. If you don't have to give your phone number. It could be an email, a website. You know, can they find you on any social media like LinkedIn or whatever? Or
okay, all right. So I am definitely they can connect with me on I'm on LinkedIn, Instagram, Shaker. No, I can't use Shaker. Shakers. So LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Those are.
So Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn. All right. So in the episode description box, I'm going to put links that people can, they'll see it right there in terms of, you know, so they can reach out to you. So, you know, I just want folks to realize Dale's a great person to have in your network and to reach out to and build a relationship with. So thank you so much for that, Dale. And all right. So that sort of wraps up and concludes our interview. I'll give you the send off. Is there any last words you want to make, provide, or?
No, so, Luke, I just personally want to thank you. Again, you mentioned that we met a year ago, and, you know, in probably the worst, you know, times in our life, but we've managed to stay connected, And, you know, like yourself, I managed to stay connected with a lot of people that I met during lockdown. And this motivates me as well that, you know, we're still able to work, or we were still able to work back then, and we've continued to just, like, grow. And I really appreciate that, and thank you for the time.
You got it. Thank you for being a guest on this show. I really appreciate it because I know you're very busy, so I appreciate you coming on. I want to thank everyone out there in the audience who's listening. I'm sure they found this interview to be motivating and inspiring. I know I have. So thank everyone. So again, thank you so much, Dale. I'd love to have you to come back on, anytime in the future to talk about, anything new going on or whatnot. So again, thank you so much, and I'm going to see everybody in the next episode. Take care, everyone. Have a wonderful day. Take care. Bye. Hey, guys, before you go, just real quick, if you can just do me a favor, if you can head over to the Apple Podcasts app, and if you're not there already, and if you can leave me a 5-star review, that would be great. If you love the show, if you can just go ahead and do that, and that will help to spread the word about the show, and other people can enjoy the show as much as you do. And so if you can do that, that would mean the world to me. And also, if you want to email me with any feedback or any praise or support, please feel free to go ahead and do that. And you can also email me to request to be put on our email list. So we can send you out emails when new episodes come out. So thank you very much for being a fan of the show. Thank you for listening to the show and supporting the show. So if you can do that, go out and give us a 5-star review on the Apple Podcast app. That would be great. And if you can email us, so we can put you on the email list and email us with feedback and praise, that'd be amazing. Thank you so much, and I'll see you guys in the next episode. Take care. Bye-bye.